Welcome to the second episode of the Powell Cotton Museum's podcast mini-series, Collection Conversations. In each of these episodes, we'll be chatting with a mixture of museum professionals and community collaborators who have been working with the Powell Cotton Museum to explore areas of our collection that resonates with them. As a museum undergoes a programme of reimagining, we want to explore some more complex aspects of our collection's past to understand how we make our museum more relevant and inclusive for our current and future audiences. I'm Emma-Jane Hamilton. I'm one of two learning engagement officers at the Powell Cotton Museum, and today I'm delighted to be in conversation with Mia from Margate Pride.
Thank you for having me. I'm Mia. I'm one of the organisers for Margate Pride. We describe ourselves as an arts and culture-led pride. You know, so we have big Pride celebrations, we're calling it a festival, around Pride Day, which is the 13th of August this year, it's 2022. But we also do programming all year round with the community, with youth groups, older members of Margate and Thanet and so on. So, yeah, that's us.
Fabulous. So we invited you to the museum to come and look at our collection of textiles. And we had a very exciting walk around and look at what we have to offer. So I was going to talk about Gallery 3.
Yep.
Where we've got these beautiful textiles on the wall. And I was going to talk firstly about the Albertina Sisulu dress, the blue indigo dress.
Yes.
And our start of our conversation about why fabrics and social fabrics are such important things to us as a museum.
Yeah.
And then I was going to see how you felt about it too.
Sure.
Okay. So we were discussing this last time when you guys came to see us, and we were talking about the importance of political statements and statements within fabrics, and how the museum's displays can really portray this. And we've recently actually acquired a beautiful kanga, so that's the beautiful long piece of material with the image in the middle, which is a kanga made by Kwira, who's an LGBT activist from Kenya. She sadly is no longer with us, but she's made a beautiful collection, which is aimed at her original plan was to create over 196 different kanga for all over the world about LGBTQ history. And each one had a quirky phrase on. So the one we've been able to borrow to have on display is a beautiful yellow one about with the trans women on the front. It did cause controversy at the time, and it's such a beautiful thing, but we wanted to see what you guys thought of it as well. And when we saw it, we were really happy, and I'm so glad that we've been able to get it.
Yeah, we were really drawn to those objects as well. I think when we came for our initial visit, you know, we were looking around the whole of the collection to see what sort of spoke to us and kind of connections that could be made to sort of the queer experience. Yeah, and they immediately leapt out, you know, kind of coded dress and banners. Yes. And statements on textiles is very relatable in terms of, well, all activist groups, I guess. But, you know, especially the LGBTQIA+.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we just found them, well, they're actually really striking as well. Mm. Like, you know, content aside, they're like really poppy. Yeah. And quite fun and bright. Not my personal kind of wardrobe. I'm super boring. But yeah, many of my friends and our community kind of, you know, make a statement a bit about who they are through their dress and, you know, yeah, colourful hair and so on. Yeah, so they leapt out immediately.
I definitely think kanga resonates in that way, because it can go from having all the dark colours to every colour you want. Also, colours resonate different meanings as well. So you have red for joy and love and yellow for happiness and things like black for craziness. And it's just such a beautiful way of thinking. And the way
Do you know where those colours came from, like how those associations were made?
So it's a lot of folklore.
Yeah.
When you look into the history of kangaroos, so I've recently created a loans box for schools about kangaroo and secret stories and how they resonate with children to tell stories and things like that, and it's really important for us. But what really sang it to me was that there was all these secret hidden meanings behind absolutely every element of a kangaroo, and it was just so magic. So there is lots of different stories as to why different areas have different colourways as well. And also it can be gang related, it can be anything, it could be to even down to a local flag, and that can affect the colourways of how things work and what they mean. But the main ones is gold and royalty, and that's the main one that you have to worry about.
Right, okay. It's kind of interesting that different kinds of communities or groups adopt this like format for themselves. Like, the, you know, the obvious connection to the queer community is the hanky code, which like, I think predominantly gay men, although it is used by the whole of the queer community, as I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it was sort of started in the 70s. I am no expert, by the way, massive disclaimer, yep. in terms of any sort of fashion history. But yeah, it's one that kind mm-hmm. of I'm aware of. So, yeah. you know, if you wear it on in your back pocket on the left, it means you're kind of, hang on, I think that means you're a top.
Yeah,
so it's
yeah,
kind of what you like
the
doing.
The bottom, yeah.
and then if you wear it on the right, it's you're kind yeah. of happy to be the recipient. Mm. Yeah, they are. Quite complex. I think you yeah. really need to. I mean, I guess if you're into a thing, you know the colour and you know to look yeah. out for it.
It's always a niche, and what I think is interesting, especially about Kanga and textiles for me, is how they translate across to everyone, regardless of if you can read or if you can write or if you can't, mm. or if you're looking for a colourway, for example, for a secret story. Because Kangas tell stories, they have the beautiful Swahili phrases at the bottom, and some of them are quite scolding, but it's all for the interpreter. Or whoever's wearing it to kind of express it. So even if I was wearing something that was quite offensive to you, that's your choice to be offended by it. And I just think that's so magic. Mm. And the way it's translated across as well into hanky-cos and things like that is just, it's also yeah. really, like, they're all linked in a weird way that I'd never thought possible. But definitely. Once you start looking, you're like, oh, my goodness, that's yeah. the same.
Do you know when sort of Kangas originated?
Yes, so they started out in about the 1700s, and it okay. was all to do with trade. Right. So they went all across the coasts and were sold, and then it kind of became a political and religious and also then a daily thing. So you're given a kanga when you're born and you have one when you die. You get given them all throughout your life, and it's a really important celebratory thing, like a pair of shoes for us, really.
Yeah.
Or a brand that you really love wearing, but it's the whole way through your life you'll have different kangas for different elements and to show your emotions, because for some people, kangas are their only way of talking. If you are with someone and you're not allowed to say anything that you physically want to say, kanga is the only way you can actually say that without us saying, yeah. it's communication,
can
it's
you,
magic.
Can it be dangerous?
Yes,
then?
It can.
Because obviously you're, like, if you're in a situation where you're, you know, not supposed to be speaking about a certain subject, but you know, yeah. you're kind of very clearly communicating on your clothing, like, is that not dangerous, like, would
yeah.
you...
Which is one of the reasons why we've got these new kangas that we're actually putting in for the display, because the artist that made them got a lot of issue for being a queer woman in Kenya, but also for having to be brave enough to make these statements and to say, yeah. this is how I feel, this is current, because kangas to me, and this is me saying it as a non-professional, but as someone that just loves them,
yeah.
they are like phones. They are showing you the trends of what's going on. They're showing you what people feel without actually physically saying it. And Akwira was right. She was showing all these beautiful phrases and showing history, LGBTQ plus history, on everything. And I just think it's such a magic way to work and to be brave enough in a world where wearing kangas can actually get you into trouble. Especially if you're in a political town and you're against the opponent, it can cause a lot of problems.
Mm. God, it's very brave. I guess it puts things into a certain context. I know that, you know, we kind of create banners and wear slogans on T-shirts. And I know that there's a kind of long history of badges and painting up coats within the queer community, which I guess actually is, you know, I saw the documentary Rebel Dykes, which is fantastic. And it's kind of, forgive me if I'm getting the précis wrong, but it looks at a community of, like, queer women, dykes, kind of in the 80s, who very much were pretty unapologetic. Like, even within the queer lesbian community, they were kind of seen as outsiders. Like, so they're, you know, super short hair, kind of big black boots, lots of leather, you know, piercings, colourful hair, which today is, like, completely normal. But then it was really... really, really ill statement. And they got, you know, attacked and criticised a lot for being that outwardly queer. But they were very unapologetic. And I think, yeah, we've got a lot to thank them for paving the way.
And you think about that, with that, like the women in their 20s that would have the bars, you know, the private bars that would have women dressed as men.
Yep.
And just trying to express yourself in a safer way, in a safer environment, because it's not safe to be who you are. And it's such a tragic, but it's so beautiful that this is kind of translated across.
Yeah.
In all materials and social, I call it social fabrics, but the way that they work to kind of express yourself, even if it's a hidden pocket on your inside jacket, which was one thing I used to see from, like, the 1920s, to have, like, a tiny piece of ribbon on the inside to say, just a small nod, and it's just enough to kind of identify yourself without, but to the right people.
Yeah, and I think in the 20s as well, it was kind of an interesting time, because I think for the first time, women actually had short haircuts,
yeah,
which was completely new. And I think kind of queer women in particular, like, went quite extreme. And, like, as that became, you know, as that went out of fashion, they sort of retained those haircuts. Like, there's some quite iconic images of, like, Radcliffe Hall, who's a, you know, lesbian author. Yeah, I mean, she, you know, she looks like a drag king, really.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, she had, like, beautiful suit, super short hair, really slick.
Yeah, because I think there's some books from, like, the 1920s about the power of wearing a suit as a gay-identified woman.
Mm.
And the power it gives you to be in a male suit, in a male world, where that's just your comfy control. Yeah, it's comfy
you know,
and practical.
You're not corseted. You're, like, suddenly you can breathe.
Who wants to wear a corset?
I know, God. I cannot even conceive. Unless, you know, it's a special occasion.
Yeah, but this is the sort of things that is interesting to us as the museum. We want to see how these sort of conversations go and how we can correlate with local communities and groups to show what we have, to showcase things that we have out that we didn't really realise until someone starts rummaging and going, oh, this actually could work for, you know, Market Pride or whoever, and we can help build ideas and projects together and really work with our community, and because that's what I really want to do.
I think fashion in particular is such a kind of, you know, and costume and, you know, all those symbols and traditions, you know, there's always, you can always make connections, and especially with the Powell Cotton collection, there's like loads of different kinds of jewellery that means, you know, it's ceremonial and stuff. That's really fascinating.
It's a treasure trove when you want to start digging, and you're like, wow, I didn't realize that. Which I'm still doing now, like a couple of years on from working for the museum. I'm still very much looking at things with fresh eyes and going, I've never seen this, but this is amazing, and everyone needs to see it. Which I'm so glad that other people feel the same.
Yeah, definitely. Is your sort of specialist area like the fashion and textiles?
No, I have an art-based background.
Yeah.
And I used to previously work for the Turner Contemporary, so I've kind of gone from working in the arts to museums, which is a bit of a jump. But yeah. I'm just really interested in pattern and textiles now because of the stories and the secrets behind them. Because we were teaching it before, but we weren't teaching it in a way that was, for me, was an engaging, fun way for people to kind of resonate.
Yeah.
It wasn't accessible, and people weren't really getting it, why these materials are important and why we need to show them more and explain why we have them.
Yeah, I think social history, my background's a bit, I'm not a curator, but I've worked in museums a lot. And I just think, you know, the material world, objects, you know, they've all got a story, you know, how they were used, how they were designed, where they were made, symbolically what they mean. It's a wealth.
Yeah. And it just it continues growing as well. So it's constant changes, which makes it so exciting because you can have something from, for example, we have kangas with from the 80s with the AIDS pandemic things going on. People with, like, celebrating, you know, looking after people being poorly.
Wow.
These got burnt. I know we have one. I think we have one in our collection. I'm not sure. We might not be able to put this in the podcast. We have one, and it got destroyed because they were so anti it at the time. And then that's when it's kind of, but now it's a really political thing that needs to be kept and looked after.
Yeah, there still is stigma around HIV and AIDS. But that reminds me, there's I think it was in America, this enormous quilt that was made. I can't remember exactly when. I think it's the 80s and 90s. So, you know, huge. I mean, it wasn't like a regular bedspread size quilt. It would be like, I don't know, 2 or 3 meters square to represent a loved one. And it was just this enormous, enormous spread. I think it was like laid out in Washington sort of symbolically. Yeah, I'll have to check like how regularly and stuff it was done. But yeah, it's just that like memorial through textiles. And I think, that I find really interesting. And the fact that also it's, you know, obviously you've got to look after these objects, but, you know, they do last a while. You know, it's not just a print paper that's discarded.
And they're printed, but they're so to a penny, some of the kangas we have collected in the past. A lot of kangas also used to be made by children. They're not so much now, but they're made of mills, so it's a lot quicker than it used to be. You usually get two as a pair, and then you split them, and then you can make your dresses or whatever you're going to use them for. In our Trend Textiles Blowings box, I've made a little jokey guide of 103 things you can do with kanga, just to kind
you
of
came
give
up
you...
with 103.
Yeah, I could have done more, but I didn't. But yeah, it's these sort of things that you can do. They're everyday objects, but they're so important and part of our daily life, which is just
So what, are they used as...
Yeah.
Because they're kind of, you know, they're a very sort of fixed format. You've got a board around the edge with a pattern in and then and kind of... Is it always a kind of representation of a person in the middle?
It could be a person, it could be objects, it depends.
Animals or
whatever. Yeah, it could be a story. It depends on where it's from and the context of it. So, for example, if you've got things with food on, it could be about wealth and having money and financial things. There can also be things about... If you've upset your neighbour, there might be an apology symbol of some kind. And then sometimes they mix in like paisley-style patterns or adinkra patterns as well into the mix.
What's adinkra?
Adinkra is a different type of printing as well. They're done with wooden blocks.
Oh, yeah.
And they're made in Ghana.
Yeah. Is it across the whole of the African continent or sort of certain
sections,
regions?
Yeah, regions
that
and things.
So mainly
at the moment it's Tanzania is one. And it used to be Kenya, but it depends where the factories are. But mainly it's Tanzania. And now even India. But you can. There's a place in Manchester that does it as well. And they have a traditional setup. Yeah.
Wow.
And they've been going for over 100 years. And they're printing traditional kanga.
So was that originated from someone from Africa having kind of relocated?
I think it's to do with the trade networks and how people have done it. So, yeah, there's a lot of that going on. And also you have different areas. So mainly Swahili is used at the bottom with the phrases. And some of them are quite religious, so it might be. Or it could be also things about the weather to make sure that the crops are going to grow. That's another really good one. But my favourite ones are literally the ones of slander and upsetting other people because the phrases
are
so cutthroat.
Really? When would you actually... you've obviously gone to the trouble to design that.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a beef with your neighbour.
Mm-hmm.
You've designed it. You've then had it made. You know, this is all a bit of an effort. Mm-hmm. Would you then, stick it up on the side of your house.
We think people use them as curtains and all sorts. So, if you hang it up on your line, no one will know. It could be a mat on the floor or a tablecloth, or you're wearing it to carry items. I don't know. It's easily done.
That's hilarious. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're kind of like, they sound much more versatile than a bandana. And would they be cut up to kind of create
different
dress? It
depends on who's wearing it. Yeah, so men and women do wear them. It's mainly women that do wear them. But you were, like I said earlier, it's from the beginning, from when you're born, you're given one.
Yeah.
And when you die, you're given one as well. But if you get married, they sometimes cover people in them. And then you have to choose. They cover the grooms in them, I think. And they'll choose three people and you have to choose the right person. There's loads of traditions about it as well.
Oh, God.
It depends on where you go and regionally, but yes.
Yeah.
There's lots of different ways of wearing it as well. And people do cut them up, and some of them are like Saatchi has used a few of them for a project that he did a couple of years ago, which was exciting.
Okay. So has this particular artist, was she the first to make these sort of protest kangas for the LGBTQ+ community, or was there precedent,
There was precedent before, but no one has been as bold with it as she was and she was really pushing for it as well. So I think with the world of social media, it made her platform even bigger.
Yeah.
And so she was able to push out far more than she ever planned. Yeah. But I just love the idea that she wanted to go from every country to create one kanga with something from their history that's a part of it. And I just think that's such a magic thing to do.
It's amazing. Do you know how far she got up to? Because I know that
She didn't get very far. I think she got through. I know because we've got the Angola one. I'm just trying to think of. It's a couple. I'm not sure how far. I'd have to look it up. But
Is she Angolan?
She's from Kenya.
She's but, Kenyan.
The one that we've got is the Angola.
Fantastic. Yeah, because I before I came today, I thought I'd best check. And it was only last year that it was made legal to be homosexual in Angola. So.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a long way to go.
Yeah, there was 70. I think when I was reading about it the other day, I think at the time when she started doing it, there were 17 countries where it was illegal and it was, it's quite...
In Africa?
Yeah, in the places that she was trying to work and reach with. It was 17 areas that were quite... If you were found out, there could be a lot of consequence, and that's awful to think about as someone, for anyone just for being who you are. It's not fair.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I also, we're kind of busy doing some banner-making workshops with youth groups at the moment, and we've invited other community groups and charities to do the same for our parade this year. And I just think, just feel very lucky that you are able to display these banners safely. But I think it's very important that we do in solidarity with all the countries where it's still illegal.
Yes.
I think it's 69 countries.
Yeah.
It's still illegal to be homosexual. Mm. So, still a long way to go.
Mm. I think with the way things are going forward, it can only it can only get better, as my positive vibe of feeling. It can only get better. People can only join in once they, you know,
stay optimistic.
Yeah, stay optimistic and positive like everyone has, and then let's hope for change.
But it's definitely I don't think we can get lax. We need to keep fighting. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And it's important. And I think definitely with like these materials that we keep saying, but definitely it's one way of doing it, even if it's a small change of someone standing up for something in such a tiny way by wearing something that's important to them, by their what shows their identity and how they feel and think. I think it's such an poignant thing that we need to keep continuing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the parts of our mission is to kind of increase like queer visibility, because I think for the queer community, it's just really important to see yourself reflected in everyday, you know, in a museum collection or on the telly or, you know, as a musician, because now Section 28's out the way. It's very, very helpful because it was very harmful growing up in a society where you were not allowed to talk about being queer.
So we've come to the end of the discussion, and I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
Thank you.
And also for your honesty and insights about what we've been discussing today. For everyone else, please look out for our future episodes that we're having in our series that are coming soon. And if you want to find out more information about the projects that we've been up to, please visit our website, which is www.powercottonmuseum.org.